James, can you bring him in on your phone, maybe? Maybe that's the simplest thing.
Yeah, you want me to call him?
Yeah.
He's not on the line yet, right? Okay. Oh, he's calling me right now. Here we go.
Oh, okay.
Kurtzall?
Yeah.
You're joined into the meeting. I just merged you into the call, so you're on.
Okay.
Okay. How's that for notice?
So, Bertel, we've been talking about podcasting as a, from the point of view of generating revenue for Pacifica for a while, but you've actually gone and almost have it implemented. I know there's a couple of further steps that have to be taken before it goes live, but can you... can you give us a brief summary of what has been done and what's left to do, and whether we can use this as a model throughout Pacifica?
Okay. So I'm glad you asked. Well, first of all, hi everybody. Thank you for having me as a guest. I've been thinking about podcasts for the past 10 years. And so there were, as you all know, there have always been issues about whether or not we can have music and the rights of podcasting and all of that stuff while everybody else is doing it. And so we wanted to be careful not to be fined and then find out of business. So finally, we decided to start having some podcasting. And then one of the podcasting that we have is... we have a few shows that actually do their own podcasting, and but we have certain shows like the Leonard Lopez show that does we paid for them to have the domain, and then they put the show on a podcast. That's not really a podcast; it's just putting the show on a podcast. So we have a lot of these things. We have Black Seinfeld, who has a whole lot of people listening to it. I forgot the numbers. And so I decided that I'm going to start focusing on podcasts. And we had an intern, young people that, all this stuff. And then she was actually working as a podcast curator on a part-time job. So I asked her for help. And she actually, she wrote a whole process of what it is that a podcast is. And I'm learning every day, and I hope people get to learn. I do this project with Pacifica in mind, because normally I could have just gone ahead and started doing this, but instead I consulted with entertainment lawyer and explained to them what we're doing, and then they wrote a contract for us, the producers and whomever would be doing advertising or podcasting, and I sent that to Arthur Schwartz and Lydia Brazon, and then they liked it, and they said that I could send it to Melody Virtue. So
Melody Virtue, just for the sake of the audience, Melody Virtue is our FCC attorney.
FCC attorney, yes. Yeah. So she's had this since September the 29th, the podcast contract, and I'm pretty sure that this contract, once it's completed, would be a contract for the network. In general, the bottom line is that a third of the money goes to the producer, a third goes to WBAI so that we can have a cash and pay our bills, and another third goes to WBAI to pay for the employees who are going to be working a podcast, because it's a full-time project and job, so that if you want to make it big, at least initially. So that's how the contract is broken down. And if the producers go and find their own advertising and then their own contact, their own everything, then it's 50-50, because we get to do nothing except we have our name and so on. However, what we have been doing is Hannah, the intern who is now graduated and has been working a little part-time with us, she has been going through the process of setting up a podcast. So we, she And I'll just go over quickly what she wrote for us. And I asked Alex, actually, you can forward what I sent you to the group.
I already did that. Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. So there's a podcast production outline. You know, she talks about the expenses, the editing process. So we bought some software, promotional material, and social media, and and then the cleaning of the sound. She has curated already 10 shows of a program called Backstage Story, and then also 10 shows of another program called Dream Leapers. You know, since Harriet Cole, producer of Dream Leapers, is the one who did get me in touch with the entertainment lawyer. I mean, she used to run Essence Magazine and stuff like that, so I decided to go that way. Hopefully, by December 1st, we will launch. We have a podcast website. We shut it down. We will launch that podcast website again, and then put those curated shows. Which would be like the shows that we actually really advertise and look for advertisements for. But we will also link a lot of the shows that we have, like the Leonard Lopez show. We have Law of the Land. There's a few producers who have their podcasts already. We will put them in there, but we would really feature the one that we are curating, because they would have a good sound quality, they would have good timing, and then they would be set up so that we could put in between those things advertising. We have a potential commitment for $5,000 already for Backstage Story. And so we're waiting for the contract, and then that's basically it. Any questions? It's been frustrating. It's been a long journey. It's been slow, but I do not want to rush it. I wanted to work with my intern, half employee, and work with my webmaster, and so she has some design and stuff like that. We have to understand that for a podcast, there are themes, and then, there are like graphics that they're putting on all the time in, with every show, even though the show itself may have its own logo, like Dream Leaper, they have their registered logo. So we have to mix their registered logo with the graphics that's going to be enticing people to listen and to watch the podcast. But in the meantime, we have between the Leonard Lopez and Black Seinfeld, we have thousands of people downloading shows every week, which again brings us to the idea that I don't know if this committee realizes that once we apply for CPB money, they have accepted that there's the formula they're trying to work on that's going to count how many people are listening online. So we have a couple of thousands of podcast downloads, and that would be very very good. And that would make us qualify for CPB money.
I have some questions, Bertolt.
Yeah.
As to how the income is going to work. Will we offer subscriptions to certain podcasts? Will the subscriptions be automatically affected if you contribute to a program? Can you get the podcast if you're not even a WBAI member? Can you just buy it separately? How will all that work?
Okay. So the podcast would be mostly right now. It's a two-prong. And then that was something that was really problematic for us. The podcast would initially be a podcast available to everyone so that we can get listenership of viewers and then get advertising for those podcasts. Going forward, I think once we get within 6 months and we build a listenership, we'll charge a small fee for people to download or to have a group of podcasts, and that's why I really wanted to have Hannah around, because it's very complicated, so we will have initially open forum, and then eventually we will be charging people, a few dollars per month to download the Leonard Lopez or to download a group of podcasts. Or actually, we don't want them to download them. We want them to go straight, the message to go straight into their smartphone so that they can know they have those shows right there available to them. You know, so that's what that will do. But initially, we're really looking at advertising, because we have to build the listenership. We cannot just start charging, you know, until we start building the listenership. And then as they listen, as they start listening, they know, everyone knows that eventually, as you listen, within 3 to 6 months, we'll charge you a very small fee. But I think the most of the money will be in advertising. You know, backstage stories about black theater. I mean, there are 7 black plays right now on Broadway, and then we have access to all of them. And then we interview the people who produce them, the actors, the financier, the whole nine yards, the companies, the black companies that produce those shows. And so we would be looking at all those groups that, from the Harlem Chamber of Commerce and all of those groups that would be sponsoring this. And so we will get advertising. I mean, we have right now a potential commitment for $5,000 on Backstage Story.
Just another question, Bertold. I'll ask it anyway. Have we done some research on how other stations have done this? I know podcasting has become a major source of revenue for some of the NPR stations, particularly WNYC. Have we done some legwork in finding out how WNYC began their podcasting and how they operate?
Yes, we have, and we have a whole. I'll send you a whole document of what it is that they do. And again, I wish Hannah was here, because Hannah, not only does she, she works as the intern, she also subscribes to some podcasts from some other organizations, and she pays a monthly fee to get access to them. So she understands exactly how that works. Those organizations are not WNYC, but we have research, we look into NYC, and they do make a lot of, and WNYC makes a lot of money. What they do is they bundle their shows. So like they know that you're interested in arts and literature, so they would give you $10 per month access to a site where you have not one show, but, like a conglomeration of shows that do art and literature and interviews of that sort. So then you can, can be hooked into that whole little group of 3 or 4 shows. So that's how they do it.
Well, it's interesting because everybody knows that these days subscriptions is the most common way that people get content. It's no longer you pay the cable company once a month. You subscribe to whatever you want to from the internet.
Yeah.
A lot, that's become the dominant.
That's the way to go.
But it's also interesting because that was when Pacifica first began, when KPFA first went on the air in Berkeley. You know what they did? They first solicited subscriptions from the initial audience was going to be. They got people to subscribe in advance in order to fund it.
Well, this is really what I really want. Maybe I should not steal the bin, but the idea is also even for premiums. Like if some people subscribe to premiums and stuff like that, or buy premiums that we pitch on the air, we want them to become buddies, like a sustained donor, and then they will get some of those goodies on a regular basis without having to hear them on the air, without any pitching, anything like that. So that's the idea. That's what I want.
Okay. Well, I think I've asked enough questions. Anybody else that have any questions or anything to say?
I can hear.
Bertold?
Yes.
This is Jim. Can you talk a little bit about the people? I think we have three ways of doing this. We have podcasts that WBAI would own. We have podcasts that, and I, you know, when I say WBAI, I mean WBAI/Pacifica. But then we have podcasts that have a joint shared ownership between the producer and the station. And then I think there was a third category where when the producer would leave, then there would be a new arrangement. And then was there also another category where people who have podcasts already would somehow come in and also be on the radio, which, you know, somebody who has 30,000 podcast subscribers doesn't gain much from being on a Pacifica station. But, you know, there was some talk about that angle as well.
Well,
just comment on any of that. Maybe use some specific examples like Leonard Lopate, Mimi Rosenberg, et cetera.
Yeah. So Leonard Lopate, when Leonard Lopate just joined WBAI and then was put on WBAI, I immediately bought a domain name and created a Lopate at Large because I knew that was going to be big, and then I wanted to own it. You know, so basically, the way I understand it works with Pacifica is that any show on WBAI belongs to WBAI, Pacifica, and the producers. So it's a shared thing. In other words, the producer can go and take the show that they produce on WBAI and make money with it, and so can we. It's not an exclusive ownership. So it would be the same thing for the podcast. If a producer leaves WBAI, we can still use their podcast, the podcast that they produced while they were at WBAI up to the point that they left. You know, and so, and they can use the podcast also to make money, and we can use the podcast to make money. So that is the idea. And that's how the contract that I sent. If you guys are looking at the contract, you can read the contract. If you are lawyers also, you can take a look at it and ask for feedback, because my idea is that contract would be reviewed, cleaned up by Melody. I don't think there's much to be cleaned up. And then given to the board to review and say, this is the Pacifica contract, not a WBAI contract of podcast, you know?
Anybody else?
This is Heather. This is probably a naive question, Bertold, but I just want to know, what are some of the topics we're talking about here?
Of the podcast?
Yeah, right. I'm just curious.
Well, right now, the podcast that I'm focusing on, the two of them, one of them is Backstage Story. It's all about kind of August Wilson type stuff, black theater, black producer of theater, people in the arts, you know, seven black plays on Broadway right now. You know, we have access to. So that's one of them I'm focusing on. Another one is Dream Leaper. This is the person who used to run Essence Magazine, so she's connected, and she's running a show that's called up basically about people who have how did you become successful? What were the things that you did, and then what were the sacrifices to make to accomplish your dream? And so she already has a podcast. And but we are curating it, and she has agreed that she, you know, her podcast needed cleaning up, and so it's going to be on the WBAI podcast featured, and so those two are important to me, for sure. Eventually, we will probably have one health podcast, and I don't know exactly how that's going to go. I'm trying to figure out how that's going to go, how to curate that, and then to make sure it is something that's digestible. You know, Mimi has a podcast, Law of the Land, Gloria Vaughn Marshall's a professor of constitutional right. She has a podcast that she has. So I want to be able to talk to her. Actually, we already told her that we're going to take her podcast and move it to the WBAI site. And we'll be, if we, when we have more money, we would want to curate it, to remove the stuff that do not need to be there and then clean it up into what a podcast is supposed to be and sound like, and get advertising for it. So these are the things that we are really thinking about, you know. And Black Seinfeld has its own podcast. It's what it is, Black Seinfeld. It's a show about nothing, but it's really two young kids talking about analyzing all kinds of different things. They have thousands and thousands. I don't have the numbers with me. James, you may have that. I had them at one point. They have thousands and thousands of downloads per week. You know, very quickly over like a 2-year period, it was like amazing. So, yeah, that's what I want.
Well, thanks for that. Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay. I have another area. This is something I've asked Bertel a couple of times, and just in case anybody else is thinking along these lines, I had wondered initially whether if we started doing podcasts and we started doing advertising on our website and advertising on our podcasts, and we started turning a profit, at what point might we lose our nonprofit status or our FCC nonprofit licenses? And the answer came back from Bertold. One is you can make profit in a certain area of what you do, but still plow those profits back into the, you know, the nonprofit business or the nonprofit work that you do, which is our radio foundation and our, you know, educational nonprofit status. So it's education is our work in a way. But also that even if we became super profitable, there are huge corporations that own nonprofit media outlets, which are isolated as divisions or, you know, subdivisions that do not make profit, as opposed to the large corporations that own them, but also that as long as we're not plowing the profits back, putting the profits back out to shareholders, it's not going to private hands. It's going to be plowed back into the nonprofit educational foundation. There's no tax concern. And no license concern, nonprofit license.
Yeah, none whatsoever. Well, the example that I did give James Ferguson is when I was working in corporate America, I was working for managed care company, closely with the CEO. Well, it's a not-for-profit managed healthcare, and his salary was like $200,000. And his salary could not go any higher because of regulations of not-for-profit. So what he did, he created a company called a third-party organization, a TPA, a third-party administration, administering that company. And he was also the CEO of that company and got another $200,000 from that company. You know, so the not-for-profit is really not a barrier, you know. I would trust that we are not going to do anything crazy about the money. You know, we have so many stations that need it. God forbid that we would be in a situation where our biggest problem is what to do with the money.
I appreciate that. Just one other aspect of that, which is where there might be some concern. As Heather knows, we've talked about the question of underwriting, and it's an issue in Pacifica. Some have favored it for a long time. Others have opposed it forever. Others are thinking of it as a possible alternative, possibly temporary or otherwise, in a time of need. But it's kind of the same with the underwriting. You know, you have a question: if we do small scales, you know, mom and pop type underwriting. Heather knows, I like to say Three Sisters Organic Restaurant down the block is one thing, you know, having a Mercedes cornering in a video commercial like on PBS television stations is another thing. The moral question or ethical question for us is, how does that affect our editorial content? Is that a danger? And so we would have those same questions if it came to advertising through podcasts. And
I have a very concrete example for that for you. As a matter of fact, we have a show called Harlem Connection. What they do is they talk about everything Harlem, anything that happened at the Apollo Theater, anything that originated from Harlem. So things that as a reason, you know, to promote a small business in Harlem, you know, small minority businesses, you know, the gentrification and how they are dealing and stuff like that. Well, guess what? You know, there are thousands of small businesses in Harlem from people who are making, I don't know, like $50,000 a year as a business and then are barely breaking a profit to some bigger ones. Well, you know, our business model is instead of having one guy give us $1 million, maybe we can have 1,000 guys give us, you know, $10,000. So, you know, $10,000, if any one of them decides not to give us that money, then that's fine. It's not a big deal. You know, so, we would be also promoting, in a way, Harlem, small business in Harlem. And that would be through the podcast. And that's something we're working on right now. That's why I'm pushing this podcast a lot, because they are interviewing businesses, small businesses in the show. That's part of what they do. They have music, they have restaurants, they have shops. They talk about them, so we need to take advantage of that, you know. And the thing that would be not an underwriter, those people just give us donation as they see fit. It would not be an obligation on their part, because that's what we're supposed to do. And promote small businesses, underprivileged communities and stuff like that.
I'll respond in a way that Heather responds to me when we talk about these things, and that is that the small businesses in the communities are the backbone of the communities. And so it's, you know, it's a mutual aid sort of a situation if we're supporting the people that are the backbones of the communities that we serve.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for example, right now we are dealing,
that's not necessarily my argument. I'm trying to paraphrase Heather's argument. She can chime in if she wants.
No, I mean, for example, we have Chase Bank right now, right? For a long time, people have been telling me, why don't you use Carver Bank, which is a community bank, a small bank, as opposed to Chase Bank? You know, I mean, this is for the convenience. Things would be easier if I use Chase. But, I mean, this is something that I'm considering. That's a small business in Harlem, located in Harlem. They do business in Harlem. They have a lot of programs where they support, you know, and then give loans to small business in Harlem, business that would never get a loan from Chase. And I want to be in within that whole milieu, the Harlem Chamber of Commerce, promoting business in Harlem and the small business in Harlem. So... But, you know, hopefully, you know, the board will be there. There'll be so many people looking at this thing. So, you know, it will be regulated. It will be watched over, you know, the producers who are connected to the community will have to be talking to me and whomever else. That's why, actually, that podcast contract is with Melody Virtue right now. Since September, actually September 28th.
Okay. So, Berto, do you need any assistance from the board in following up with Melody Virtue?
Well, you know, she told me that she was busy and she would get back to me by October, mid-October, and then. But she responds to me. She says, you know, she's really overwhelmed, and then she will get back to me shortly. So I don't know. I mean, it's a 2-page contract. Hopefully she'll get back to me soon. But yes, I'd like her to know that it's important, And it's also important for the network. You know, it should be a Pacifica contract, not that there will be a contract. So whatever she does to it, it should be for the network. And so any station at the network should use that standard contract or something like it.
Well, any kind of contract that sign will have to come before the board, because it obligates Pacifica to do something. So
yeah,
that's a board matter. But I agree that it definitely should be looked at as something that we want to institute throughout Pacifica.
Yeah.
We might want to tweak the model a bit here and there, but the general idea sounds like what we want to do.
Yeah. I mean, I the first thing I did is, by the way, FYI, I showed it to media. She read it. She liked it. She said, why don't you send it to Arthur? Arthur told me that he didn't see anything wrong with it. Particularly, it's very technical language, though. And then I told Lydia that, and then Lydia said, "Well, why don't you, Elodie, tell her that I'm told you to send it to her so that she can review it." And then so that's where we are.
Okay.
So Lydia and Arthur are good with it. They like it so far, you know. And waiting for Melody to put her FCC touch in it to see what it is that you can and cannot do.
Bertold, how much money is WBAI currently bringing in with this podcast idea? I know it's small. It's new. You know, it's the beginning. It's early days.
How much am I projecting? I'm projecting.
No. How much are you actually? It's actually up and running now, so we should have a small trickle of income from it, right?
Well, it's actually not up and running. It's in the making, in the background, and then we took the whole podcast page that we had offline so that we can launch it properly, like that December 1st, hopefully, and do a marketing. And
I thought Leonard Lopate already had some people subscribed.
No, Leonard Lopate has like thousands of people downloading his show, but we have never gone.
It's still free.
We have never gone to the next step of charging anything like that.
It's still free. Okay, thank you.
What we have pending is a potential $5,000. For backstage story, for one group of people that want to advertise.
Okay, I knew that it was partially in operation. I just didn't get the point that it was. We were still not charging for that yet.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anybody else have any questions before we wind up this part of the meeting? I'm having trouble hearing you.
Me? Or any others? I would like any feedback from this group concerning price, what to charge, what they know in the different areas, and also to take a real good look at the relationship with the producers. Because I feel that the producers, if they get like a third of this thing, they will work for it. And if they get really almost nothing, then they will not care about it. It's simple. And I felt that this was, a reasonable, respectable balance. If they're going to, because the producers sometimes are being asked to record an extra 5, 10, 15 minutes of stuff that we take and put inside the podcast, and so they're doing a little extra work for the one we are really curating. So looking at those aspects in the contract, I would appreciate that and feedback.
So I think you have to go based on the industry standards, what's actually happening out there, and then also from the point of understanding that most of our producers at WBAI, at any rate, are already working for nothing. So getting anything would be an improvement for them.
An improvement, yeah.
Well, it's a good incentive.
Well, you think that you have like 100 producers doing podcasts and bring 5,000 each. It would be better than have 10 of them, you know, doing it, you know, because, you know, we didn't give an incentive. So the more attractive it is, the more the producers are going to go out of their way, and then you're going to reach out to their community and their little milieu to see if you can find a barbershop over there or whatever to support their podcast. So that's
okay.
The idea.
Yeah, I think we're...
If you want any time, just let me know. I can have you have a conversation with Hannah. She's extremely knowledgeable, and it just for the record, it took me like 6 months. It took me 6 months to understand what she was talking about podcasts. After I was like, well, you know, what do you mean you have to edit and clean it up and all that stuff? You see all the things that she sent you? You know, like, well, you just take the show and then you just podcast it. No, there's so much more to do. And then I was slow getting it. So just
Bertel, one other question about the, you know, we were talking in another context about monetizing the archives. We talked about the pros and cons of trying to use the archives in podcasting. And I know that there's separate problems with that, but talk about the feasibility of utilizing the archives in podcasts.
Well, I'm assuming you're talking about the WBI archives. Like, in other words, the show is played in its archive or in the archives.
And the Pacifica archives.
Okay.
Is if you're doing a podcast and then you're putting it out for free in the Pacifica archives, that's going to be a negative incentive for people to use the podcast. But also, you know, what about making a podcast series? So, you know, how about a Bob Fast Memorial podcast series, or, you know, historical speeches?
All of these things can happen. You know, that, you know, they're not mutually exclusive. But what I was saying, though, that our archives, like, we do a show right now, and it's being recorded, and it's put in the archives, right? Now, people have access to it for, like, I forgot, 6 weeks. And then they don't have access to it anymore, but we have it in the archives. That show is a show. It's not a podcast. You know, and we can reduce the access to the archives, and we can just archive the shows and then just make shows only available to podcasts for people. And once we get going and then we have this thing set up on a subscription basis, you know. But that's a slow process because that's a coordination between my webmaster and some social media people and my podcast person to understand how that works and how do you set up the subscription and how do you collect that money on a regular basis, like a subscription to BI Buddy. That's something that we're trying to work out, to figure out. Yeah, you need some technical collaboration between, you know, the webmaster creating that whole domain and page area where people can go and log in if they pay, and the podcast person who's putting the curated podcast in there. And that is why we did go about buying all the software that we needed. We have software that we bought. Came about $200-something, and then there are some software where you only can have subscription. I think it's like $30. We have two of them. One of them for our main intern employee who is doing the podcasting, and then one of them for interns that come in and work under her as a different login, so she can monitor them. You know, so I think they're like $25-26 each license.
Bertel, you know what just occurred to me? It's mm-hmm. It's probably difficult for most of us who don't have experience with this to follow all the details, but it might be really useful if we could, next time we meet, we could have a Zoom conference and you could have somebody demonstrate how the
podcast. I can have Hannah and Chris demonstrate. I'm definitely not the person to break this down. I'm definitely not that person. It's complicated.
Do many members think that would be a good idea?
I think it's a wonderful idea.
Yeah,
Julie, I agree.
Read the document that we sent you to get a beginning understanding of how complex it is, you know, what she's been doing. And then when we meet again, I told her already to be prepared to have a presentation. And, you know, she'll have different sites and she'll show you. I mean, what she did with me before, she showed me other sites. What they do and what she likes about this, why she's subscribing to some of those to get content for herself, you know, and then why and then what's going on. So she can go
through
that.
Shall we reconvene in, say, 2 weeks?
Hopefully by that time we will have ours up and running December 1st. That's the goal.
Okay. Well, even if it's not running, you can still.
Oh yes, you can still show you the whole thing.
Yeah. So does everybody agree? Does that sound reasonable? 2 weeks from today.
Yes.
Sounds good to me.
Okay.
Then.
We have a number of other.
Yeah, I will keep in touch with you and let you know the progress, and I will tell Hannah immediately she starts preparing. Either a PowerPoint presentation or, you know, social media, online presentation, so that you can know what's going on. So she can really break it down for you.
Okay.
And that would be in coordination with the webmaster, because he has to also explain how that interacts with our website and how do we manage all of that stuff.
This is Beth regarding the date. If I'm not mistaken, that's the fourth Monday of the month, and that is now the regular evening meeting of the National Development Task Force.
Oh, no, you can have your meeting, call the meeting whenever you want to. I'm trying to go live by December the 1st.
Okay.
So what time does your Development Task Force meet?
5:30. Our time is 8:30 your time.
Okay, well, we can meet earlier. We can meet like 6:30 Eastern time, like a good 2 hours before your meeting.
Okay.
Is that okay with everybody?
Yep.
Sounds good.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to me, giving me this forum, and hopefully we get Pacifica out of this situation.
Okay.
Thanks, Berthold.
Yes. Okay.
Well, I think we're done for the evening. Does anybody have any other items they want to discuss before we adjourn? Okay. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
So moved, James.
Any objections? Okay. Good night, everybody. Thank you.
Thanks. Night.
Thanks, Alan.
Good night.
First of all, everybody.
Thank you.
Good night.